Hello, everybody. Hello. It's a Benny Hill theme. Whatever. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of What's for Dinner. I am your host of hosts, your lord of... Well, not your lord of lords. I think that position's been taken. But I will be your host for the next little while or so. And first of all, thank you to everyone who is listening, whether you're downloading this on iTunes, streaming it on Stitcher, or you just grab this right off the website. Either way, thanks for listening. I want to send out special thanks, of course, to those who are leaving such nice comments. Wait, cell phone is ringing. That's the cell phone of my guest, I believe. Yes, that was the...
Mike the Handyman.
Aha, that was Mike the Handyman. Well, you got a little sneak peek of the voice of my guest, but I'm still going to keep that for a secret. But what I was saying before was I want to thank again those who have left some really nice comments. Jose, very nice. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And my good buddy Grant, who I know listens to this on a regular basis, literally my oldest friend in the world. I've known him since I was 4 years old, and I come to find out he is listening to this on a regular basis. So, Grant, I don't know if you're listening. You're probably not listening to this right away because you told me you're behind an episode. So when you do hear this, Grant, thank you very much, man. I love you, and I appreciate it. So let's get on with the show. This is a very special show. Very special. Very interesting because I'm actually doing this episode from South Florida, where I am currently just wrapping up my wonderful vacation. I had a great time. Allison and I had our first anniversary down here. And we got to celebrate it with family, which is the best thing to do. My family being my parents, my brother, his new special friend, my niece, and Allison and her mother. We were all down in Key West for a wonderful vacation. And the vacation was a gift for anniversary from my parents. And that brings me to my guest on this week's show. This is going to be interesting. I'm not sure if you're going to find it as interesting as I am, but I think you will. My guest is my father, Stuart Schultz. Hi, Dad.
Hey, son. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Wonderful. Want to put a shout-out to Grant and all the other Grunbaums.
That's another shout-out to Grant and the other Grunbaums. So, yeah, I'm sitting here, and I'm scrambling, like, who can I get for this show? I got to, because last week, I wasn't able to get an interview, so I just uploaded a recent show that I did, which was still fun and something that's a little different, but, you know, I don't want to keep kind of wimping out. I want to have guests. And I thought, how cool would it be? This is very rare that I have access to sit with my dad and just talk to him and interview him a little bit. And so I'm excited. Are you, Dad, now, honestly, Dad, does this seem stupid to you? Because we're literally sitting in your family room. I'm just basically holding a recorder in my hand. And I know this seems like some shit little show I'm doing when I'm like 8 years old. Like, Daddy, be on my show. But this is real. This is really going to be broadcast and people are going to listen to it. So how does that make you feel?
Makes me feel pretty good, son, but as I'm trying to listen to what you're saying, I think you're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, I am. I am. Don't get me wrong, Dad. You were, like, way low on the list.
Last choice.
Oh, God. I mean, even, like, I was going to dig somebody up. Like
the cat.
Yeah, the cat would have probably been a better interview. No, Dad, you know. Yeah, I'm not scraping the bottom. You're my dad. You're my dad.
Oh, then I can scrape your bottom. I did when you were a little baby.
Okay, here's a rule. Now, you're probably going to figure this out a little. You probably already did by now that my dad, I get my sense of humor and my Skippy Green is very much from my father's side of the family, that stupid, filthy, silly sense of humor. Do you deny this, Dad?
So what's your point?
Exactly. So I'm going to try to preface this by saying, we could still be silly, but I'm going to ask you some serious questions, and I want you to be kind of serious, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. So how many testicles do you have?
Since the operation, 4.
Okay, good. Okay, let's get to serious. So, Dad, now this is interesting for me because, like, we were talking about this today. I'm finding, like, I'm in my late 30s now, and I am really becoming aware of how much I am like you. Some of your great traits, like your humor, and some of your really fucking fucked up traits, like your stubbornness and your Well, stubbornness, I guess, would be the biggest thing that I... Don't give me that look. You're stubborn, and I'm stubborn, and Allison points out how much I'm like you so often. Now, what?
I refuse to finish this interview.
You're such a dick. But, so, now, do you honestly see, like, any traits of you in me? And don't do some stupid, like, pedophile joke when I said traits of you and me, not your DNA. I'm talking about emotional traits and things like that.
Well, you realize this is difficult because the first time I interviewed without my lawyer. But, yes, I do. You've got my sense of... You've got Grandpa's sense of humor.
Grandpa
Harold. He was... I think dirtier than you are sometimes as Skippy, but
what?
Yeah. Yeah, but yes, I see a lot of the traits. You're very handsome.
Well, that's a given. I'm getting your gray hair, too.
My hair is not gray anymore. It's white.
Whatever you want to say. Whatever you want. Mine's salt and pepper. So, Dad, you were a teacher for a long time, right?
38 years.
Is that what you wanted to be when you were a kid?
Ever since I was a little boy in Newark.
In where?
Newark, New Jersey. My older sister, used to take me out in the backyard with the neighborhood kids and play school. And
that wasn't like a dirty thing or anything, like let's go play school, like doctor, right?
No, I'm being very serious now.
Okay, sorry.
And... We talk about my sister playing doctor with me, but it really...
Oh, Jesus.
No, and with all the neighborhood kids. And then she became a teacher, and I always wanted to be a teacher after that. In fact, I wanted to be a music teacher because I always enjoyed singing and playing instruments. And I started off college as a voice major and a music teacher, but then I discovered special ed and became a special ed teacher for 38 years.
So special, that's very interesting because I knew that you did special ed, but I didn't know that his sister, my Aunt Bobby, was such an influence on that.
She really was. She's still a teacher, you know. She's, you know,
part-time.
Yeah, substitute teacher, yeah. But she's excellent. She is. And your brother is a guidance director, and your mom is the vice president of the teachers union. And many of your cousins are teachers.
So just sad. You're disappointed that I went into comedy.
At the beginning, yes.
Well, no. Okay, there's a question for. Okay, I'm actually gonna get a little more comfortable for this because I was sitting next to him on a recliner and it was awkward trying to get this to record to him. Now a lot, you know, I obviously have a lot of friends who are in comedy, and I could imagine as a parent. It's a very unsure profession to see your child go into, honestly. Because I've been wanting to do comedy since... How old was I?
You were 5 years old. No, seven. Seven?
Eight.
Eight, okay. When you did a contest down here in South Florida, it was called the Best of the West, and you were probably the youngest person in the whole thing, and there were teenagers, there were singers and dancers... And you were the only comic, if you will, and you told...
Oh, I remember. I remember what I told.
You told Grandpa's jokes. My father, his grandpa.
No. What if? This is true, by the way. I was 8 years old. It was the summer of 1983, and I did impressions. That was my thing when I was a kid. I could do well. I did my best 8-year-old impressions of like Ronald Reagan, John Wayne,
Carol Channing,
Wallace Berry. You taught me how to do. I didn't even. To this day, I don't know who Wallace Berry is, but I could do an impression of him because you and Grandpa taught me.
Well, most of you folks out there don't know that his nephew was Noah Berry.
I had no idea.
I'll let you Google that, people.
Okay, Google Noah Berry. Berry, whatever. And I also, what else did I did? I sung Mexican Radio, that song by Wall of Voodoo. And I think, if I recall, I impersonated Dolly Parton singing Jolene, if I remember.
And I was there with your Aunt Bobby, my sister. Mom wasn't feeling well, so she didn't go. Was Grandpa there?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Grandpa was there. And... we were looking at all the other, remember, you were the youngest there, and you were doing these stupid jokes my father taught you, and my sister and I looked at each other, and, you know, he says, well, don't worry, we'll take him out for ice cream afterwards, you know, make him feel better. And then when they called the winner, it was you, and you came up like you knew you were going to win, and you grabbed a trophy that was probably two-thirds your size. You held it up in both hands and shook it like that, took a bow, like from your waist down, you know, like real bow, and then walked off like you knew you were going to win all the time. And my sister and I looked at each other and said, whoa. First thing we did, no cell phones in those days. We went to a payphone and called Mom.
See, I honestly remember the, I remember everything, but I remember that the trophy came later. We still have it. As a matter of fact, it's just found in the garage. But I remember the trophy being delivered. I think I remember bowing, but I think the trophy was given to me later, right?
Well, yeah, they had to engrave it.
Oh, very good point. Very good point. But yeah, Grandpa was there too, and that was like, I remember this. I was on stage. I just did an impression of Richard.
Grandpa.
Just did an impression of Richard Nixon. And my grandfather, my father's father, Harold, was a big guy, like kind of very heavy. Not very, very heavy, but heavy.
230.
Yeah, there you go. And but a short guy, right?
All right. Okay.
but she was like probably about 5'10", 5'11".
My mom?
Your dad.
Oh, yeah, 5'10", 5'11".
So he looked kind of stocky. But I remember him sitting in the audience, and I did the Richard Nixon, and he had this big jovial laugh like Santa Claus. And I looked, and on stage, I looked at him, I go like, hi, Grandpa.
No, you didn't do that. Oh, Grandpa, like that, when you put your hands out.
Yeah. Now I remember the hands going out. But one of my favorite memories. But seriously, now then, so here I was, this little kid who, you know, told stupid jokes and did stupid impressions, whatever. Honestly, did you think I was going to follow through with this, or did you just think I was a goofy kid?
I still think you're a goofy kid. And I remember, if we can skip 3 or 4 years, your bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And I said, Philip, what? Philip means flip. What?
Now you know my real name.
What theme do you want? And you said comedy. I said, why? He says, because I'm going to be the most famous comedian in the world. So your mom and I scrambled out, and we got somebody to do centerpieces. Each table had its own comedian. That's right. But what did we know? There was a Henny Youngman comedian. Yeah, and there were, you know, the comedians that we knew, and anyhow, it was just so cool. But the coolest thing about your bar mitzvah was what? Was what?
All right, now this is interesting, because this story, coincides with something that just happened yesterday. I told you about this, but I'll tell it on the old show here. The coolest thing, and you know, I was talking about this, I think, to Darren and Allison, saying this is probably one of definitely in the top 5 gifts I've ever gotten in my life. My father had a very close friend who is Ben, so close that I called him Uncle Ben since I was a kid. And my Uncle Ben was in the business for a while. I think he was an agent of some kind. And he knew somebody who knew somebody who knew Weird Al Yankovic's manager. And for anybody who knew me as a kid, you knew that I was the biggest Weird Al fan. I'm talking to the point of obsession, and I won't even get into detail with that. To this day, I still am a huge Weird Al fan, not to the obsessive nature I was when I was a kid, but
You used to cut out every mention of Weird Al, even if, in those days, TV Guide, even if it just says, tonight appearing Weird Al, you cut out this little quarter-inch thing, and you put it into your scrapbook.
I just said I didn't want to go into the obsessive nature, but I have a scrapbook, still have it, found out yesterday, too, that had, any mention of Weird Al in TV Guide or the newspaper, I'd cut out. When UHF came out, Weird Al's movie in 1989, which is still a great fucking movie, every day I'd look in the paper at the movie listings, and if it was playing, I'd cut it out and highlight it and put it in the scrapbook. I have pages of just movie showings for UHF. It was obsessively weird.
Even after all these years, I want to throw a dog out the window.
My dad's citing a UHF scene. Very cool, Bob. But the cool thing is, and then I'll actually do this, try to do this chronologically. So that was me when I was a kid, just obsessive Weird Al. So my Uncle Ben knew somebody who knew Weird Al's manager. And he was able to get Weird Al to send me a personal happy bar mitzvah message on a cassette tape. And matter of fact, oh shoot, I don't think I normally I would probably edit it and into this interview, but I don't think I have it with me here in Florida. And
Jesus.
this is oh I'll tell you what it says. If I okay, tell you what, if I can find if I actually have the interview with me, I'll edit it right. I'll edit it in right now.
Hello, this is Weird Al Yankovic, and I just want to say hello to my close personal friend, Philip Schultz. Philip, happy birthday. Congratulations on becoming a man, and I hope you have a wonderful life filled with broccoli and cheese whiz. Bye! Goodbye! Goodbye! Goodbye, Philip! Goodbye!
That was a message. Very quick, like 10 seconds, whatever that was, but, my father, I didn't know. I don't know how you kept this secret, by the way. Because if this was my kid and I knew what this would mean to him, I would be giddy. I would be dropping hints like, I hear somebody might be coming to your bar mitzvah. Somebody, you kept it so cool, which I'm glad you did, because it blindsided me to the point that I mean, I really was speechless. But I, being a ham that I've always been,
you collapsed on the stage.
I collapsed the dance floor where the candle lighting was. But yes, I pretended to faint. But I mean, I probably would have if I was any less of a ham. But to the and I still have the actual cassette that they came with. That's over 30 years ago. I'm sorry, 20 years ago, and still one of my most treasured gifts and best presents I ever got. And the funny thing is, and I was telling you about this yesterday, I found my old I dig around in my parents' garage when I'm down. I found my old yearbook from when I was in 11th grade. And there was a picture of me in the yearbook on one of these random pages. And it says, "What do you want to do after you graduate?" And I was 11th grade, and it said something like, "When I graduate in 92, I want to achieve my dream of becoming a comedic actor like Weird Al Yankovic." And I took a picture of that. Which, number one, how amazing is that? That 20 years later, I've achieved my dream.
How amazing is it you know how to take a picture?
That too. My dad's an idiot. But I love you. But no, I mean, how many kids can say that from high school in a quota? How many kids in their yearbook go, "I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. I want to be that," and they end up being something else. They end up, they for whatever reason, they just didn't follow what they wanted to. And I without patting myself too much on the back, I did that. I mean, that's pretty fucking cool. But I took a picture of that quote with the pic with my picture from the yearbook. I put it up on my Twitter at Flip Schultz, and I mentioned I tagged Weird Al in that, who is at Al Yankovic. And I found out that right after I tweeted that, Al himself had favorited the tweet, and that kind of makes me like that kind of makes me feel good too. That Weird Al's out there, and he saw that. And also, little side note, in case you guys listening didn't know, I've actually achieved another dream of performing with Weird Al several times. I got to open for him several times to the point now that I wouldn't say we're not friends by any stretch of the imagination. But if I when his drummer and I are pretty good friends, John Bermuda Schwartz. And whenever they're playing, John usually is able to get me backstage passes. So I go back, and there's Weird Al, and he sees me. He goes, "Oh, hey, Flip," and he gives me a hug and comes over and talks to me. And that's a really fucking cool feeling, And that, and I guess I've been rambling so much about me, but back to you, Pop. Like, did you really honest? And I'm asking you honestly. I don't want a smart ass answer. I don't think I've ever really talked to you about this. Did you really think that I would follow through with this, honestly, or did you think it was just some kind of pipe dream and I'd grow out of it and settle into something, serious, quote unquote?
Well, first of all, John Bermuda Schwartz.
Yeah. His name's John Schwartz, but it goes by Bermuda.
No, I could see how determined you were. Honestly, I really could see it. And then in high school, you did productions. God, I remember in elementary school when you were in the top tier of the chorus for something silly. I don't remember what it was, but you were in the chorus, and we were in the audience, your mom and me. And everybody else was singing, but you were singing with your hands up, and you were making all like you were in showbiz. And then, oh, Flip, you became Chuck E. Cheese. That was your first taste of showbiz.
Yeah, I worked at Chuck E. Cheese Pizza for two and a
No,
half
you
years.
were Chuck E. Cheese.
For a year and a half, I was Chuck E. That was my job. I dress up as Chuck E. Cheese, entertain the kids. It was it was a job.
No, actually, when I saw you performing, and you were performing, even in that silly mouse costume.
He was a rat.
Let's not go into personal things. You were performing. You weren't just sitting there in a rat costume. You were performing. You were doing everything that a rat might do.
That's good to know.
Did you know? Well, you weren't Ben, no? No, never mind. Ben.
The rat. Ben the rat, the Michael Jackson song thing.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah. But then you went into college. I saw you do Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. I saw you do comedy theater. And probably one of my greatest prides were after you graduated, going out to Galveston to see you perform in theater there, in Broadway shows.
You came Gypsy.
Oh, no, it's more than Gypsy. I came more than once, but yes, in Gypsy.
Yes, Mom has told me. That's why I have a brother.
No, just once. No, I saw you in Gypsy.
Right.
It's when I came out alone, remember, with the broken arm?
Yeah.
And that was in the Opera Theater.
Right.
But I also saw you in the Outdoor Theater.
Oh, that's right. South Pacific.
South Pacific. No, Mom was with us in South Pacific, and your brother. But I saw you in two productions there.
Whatever.
And another thing, when I was out there by myself, you and I drove out together. I was so worried about you going into a new place, you know, because I remember camp, you know.
Well, now, if you don't mind, and by the way, if you're still listening to this, noble listeners, I commend you because this is a very me-heavy show. And usually it's about the guest.
Who am I going to talk about?
Well, the thing is, I didn't want the whole show to be about me. I want to talk to you about you.
Talk.
I want to talk to you about you. I mean, I trust me, Dad, I thank you.
I just want to say a couple more things. Okay. I'm so proud of you. What you've obtained. Seeing you in Vegas so many times. Seeing you headline down here and other places. Seeing you bite your ring finger off. I am a very proud papa. But as your mother points out, I'm also losing a lot, and, you know, going senile. You know, I'm going to be 65 in a couple of weeks.
65. My dad's going to be 65. That's fucking weird. Well, and thank you, Dad. And I'm proud of you, too. My dad. See, now I want to talk a little about my father. I'm sure everybody out there listening, I'm sure you all, well, obviously you all have a father. I hope you're as close to your father as I am with mine, because I realize how lucky I am, because I do have some friends who are not close with father or mother. I'm, again, very blessed to be close to both, and my brother. My dad has a you've always been a really good dad.
Thank you.
Really good dad. You know, you there have been some hiccups along the way that you've even admitted to me. But see, the thing is, like, as I get older, okay, I'll tell you a perfect example. A couple of nights ago, I'm over at my brother's house, Darren, who has a beautiful daughter, my niece, your granddaughter, Lily. And Darren had put her to bed, and I'm kind of listening as he's tucking her in, and she's like, "Wait, Daddy, tell me a story. No, wait, Daddy, let me do this, let me do that." And, you know, "Oh, Daddy, I got to go to the bathroom." All these little excuses that I remember doing when I was a kid when I just did not want to go to bed. And then Darren and I, he put Lily to bed. We're in his living room. And, you know, I think we were chilling out, we were talking, looking at something online, and then Darren looks over my head and goes, "You are now going back to bed. There is no McDonald's tomorrow. You're going to be in timeout for 10 minutes before you go to school," and blah, 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 because she snuck out of her room because she wanted to see what was going on with the adult.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, it just happened like the other night. But I remember when I was a kid, again, I used to kind of like coerce you, "Tell me a story, Dad, I want to go." And then I'd hear you out in the living room with your friends or with Mom, and I'd sneak out, I want to see what's going on, because I always thought adults were so cool, and my mom and dad must be like these, you know, like these gods of some time, because they're the ones who are telling me what's right and what's wrong, and I'm looking up to them, and they've got to know everything, and oh, they're putting me back to bed, I did something wrong, I must have interfered with some big parental thing. And come to find out, being on the other end of it now, that you guys were just shooting the shit, probably just hanging out, and like, fuck, the kid's up again. I just want some peace. It's very interesting being on this side of it, you know?
Well, being on the other side, do you remember the story that I used to beg me to tell to you?
Oh. Marvin K. Mooney, will you please go now, Dr. Seuss, my dad's favorite story. But, yes, and again, I don't want to get sidetracked into me again.
Dr. Seuss,
Dr. whatever. I think it's just interesting, like, because I'm not a parent yet, and I'm excited, but Allie and I got some time. But again, seeing Lily experience the things that I've – it's like this whole kind of full circle thing. And like as a parent – because I also in another – you guys raised me in the 70s. Like what would you say is the biggest difference between raising a kid then and raising a kid now?
Oh, now you're making me think, son.
Ha, ha, ha.
Well, you know, I'm retired, so I'm not used to it.
Welcome back to work.
You know, just being a good parent, you know, striving to be a good parent. You know, I do you remember what I always said to you? I hope you love me half as much as...
I love you.
No, as I love my father.
Oh.
You know, I just want to be half as good a father as my dad was to me. And you just normally, I hope... do the right things. Very seriously. You normally, you know, you make decisions and you do what you think is right and for the best of your offspring and anybody else you're dealing with, whether it's other family or friends, and you hope that you don't make a wrong decision or that any decision... wrong decision you might have made doesn't come back to haunt you. But in your life, your brother's life, my almost 40 years with your mom, my beautiful 3 years with your niece, your brother, I don't think anything's ever come back to haunt me. It just comes back to delight me.
Very glad to hear that. Do you have any regrets? Not with us necessarily, but just in general?
Son, everybody's got regrets in their lives, you know, but what you have to realize, you and all my fans out there, each experience becomes a chapter in your life. You never close the book, but you turn the page.
You didn't answer my question, though.
Oh, yeah. No regrets about raising you or your brother.
I hope not. Well,
you know, you don't have to get anything too...
Do I have regret? Do I have regrets in my life? We all have regrets, I really won't.
Oh, really?
No, because regret is a downer, and I want an upper.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, what would you say?
Oh, yes. I broke your car.
He didn't break my car. He broke... And by the way, I'm not sure if there are any other parents listening out here, but here's a little tip. If your kid fucks up, and I say kid fucks up when they're a kid, you gotta let it go after a couple. To this day, my dad still brings up when I broke a television at my high school, and it's like, get the fuck over it. I'll give you the $300 it cost you to fix it if that makes you shut up.
You're lucky they weren't HD 3D.
Oh, no, this is back in the 90s. It was probably a... 30, not even a, what am I saying, like a 20-inch huge tube TV. See, kids, tube TVs were back in the time before flat screens in HD. Okay, so no regrets then. No regrets.
No regrets as far as my family is concerned.
Now, family aside, what would you say is your greatest accomplishment?
Being married for almost 40 years.
Family aside. Family, that's a given. Family aside.
Seriously?
Yeah.
One of my greatest achievements is the last 30 years of my teaching career before I retired was working with very medically involved children, many terminal. You were with me a few times when I cried. But my greatest achievement, I think, was being, I think, a good teacher. I really do.
I've always said that about you and Mom, because Mom, for the longest time, worked with... homebound kids that were kids who, like you said, might be terminal, hospitalized, some...
Highly medically involved. And your mom was a terrific special educator.
Mm-hmm.
We met in college.
Oh, yeah. Wait,
we'll get to that in a second. But I've always said that you and mom definitely have a special place in heaven, if there is a heaven, because of the... I mean, and I'm not trying to kiss ass. I don't need to. You're my father. But of the truly selfless things that you've done as a as an educator, you and mom both, and dealing with situations that I can't fathom being involved in, and I won't bring up anything because I don't want you to get too emotional, but I can imagine the legacy that you've left with not only those kids but the parents and everything. Has got to, yeah, it must make you just swell with kind of like pride and just a feeling of leaving your mark and definitely having an indelible footprint in the life of those people.
But I wasn't alone in that. I mean, I was part of a department of what I have considered for the 30 years I did it. Very elite individuals could also do what I did. And we all became really good friends. I spoke to Richie, you know, Richard, just an hour ago. One of my best friends. And I still keep in touch with all these people. Most of them are retired. I think they're all retired now from when I went in a long time ago. But no, I can't take those accolades by myself, because we were a very special sharing group, which was appreciated in those days, but unfortunately in the situation in education today, it's not the same.
Yeah. And again, I'm the one in my family who never went into education, but I'd have to imagine that from what I've just heard from you guys, that the standard of education in this, not only in the state, in this country, has really gone into the shitter. And it's sad. I think I don't know why people are forgetting such a you read all these old history books, or you watch these movies where they talk about what life was like way back when. And teachers, they were on par with politicians as far as the importance, and they still should be. And I think and I know this might be such a, I don't even know what kind of question to ask, but like, what do you think would be the simplest way to kind of kickstart people back to that way of appreciating educators the way they should be?
I actually don't really know, kid. I mean, I wanted to be an educator. I'm sure he doesn't listen, but to me or to this, but my catalyst was my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Meyer Korbman, now Rabbi Meyer Korbman, who after, God, 50 years, I actually spoke to a few years ago.
Oh, I remember you telling me
Wow. Okay, tell me about, so this is a guy, sixth grade, so you were what, 10 or 11 at the time?
Sixth grade, I was 11 or 12, yeah.
Okay, 11 or 12, so this is a good 50 years.
Well, 52, but I spoke with him 3 or 4 years ago.
How did you find him?
Really want to know? As I mentioned, Rabbi, my older sister, your Aunt Bobby, told me that he had become a rabbi and he officiated at one of her friend's granddaughter's wedding. And then I Googled him and found out where I could find him and left him a message, and he called me back. And the only thing I wanted to say to him was thank you, because he was the reason I became a teacher. He was so cool. He was so much fun, you know. And I hope kids have fun today in school. And if they had teachers like, you know, the ones that I had, and even the way I think I might have been, and your mom, we might still find young people who want to be teachers. Certainly not in for the money.
I definitely can feel you on that. Well, what happened when you called him, or he called you? Don't have to be specific, but walk me through the basics of the conversation. Like, that must have been, what were you thinking? Like, this is the guy that, it would be like Weird Al calling me
exactly.
Before I met him, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, like, what was going through your mind, everything?
I just wanted to say, Mr. Korbman, it's because of you that I spent the last 38 years of my life in this particular career. Had it not been for him, and many of my teachers, even my teachers in high school, were very, very influential. but I don't know if any of them that late in my life, high school, would have had the impact on me that, wow, how can a 11 or 12-year-old say, come on, Mom and Dad, I got to leave real fast. I got to go to school.
Yeah, I understand.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what?
But again, like, what did he say to you in response to that?
I don't know how old he is or was when I spoke with him. And I really, you know, as a little kid, he could have only been in his 20s, but to me, he was an adult. But he said, thank you. He claimed he remembered me. I doubt it. It was very nice of him. And we had a really nice conversation, about a half an hour. First thing I did was called all my friends from those days to let them know I spoke with Mr. Corbin. And I, Mr. Corbin, if you're still alive, I bless you. God bless you. And I hope you, you know, I hope others feel the same way I felt.
That's really cool, Pop. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, every so often I'll run into an old teacher. It's funny, too, how that when the teachers were always such a symbol of authority that even when you get older, even older than they were when they taught you.
Mr.
Yeah, Mr. Corbin.
Yeah, you still call him Mr. and you're still like, oh, this is my teacher. I hope, you know, like maybe initially you're like, oh, did I get in trouble at school or something? Because like again, when I see some of my old teachers, I still kind of like, I don't see them as my peers or equals. They're still a little above me. Because and I think that's all just from almost a conditioning thing when you're a child.
I would hope that everybody has somebody in their past, whether it's a teacher, a relative, or, you know, a colleague, that they not necessarily put on a pedestal, but respect so much that they can say they've had an influence in their life. And as I mentioned before, when I grew up in Newark, I really don't know what Newark is like today. It was a hometown. It really was. And every neighbor knew everybody. Every child knew everybody. Every child's parent watched out for everybody. And that was the way we felt, you know? It was a really nurturing, wonderful environment, and I cherish it. And I speak to my older sister, who also had, everybody wanted to have Mr. Corbin, not to, you know, spend so much time on him, but being a few years younger than her, we always had the same teachers. And everybody, well, getting back to my sister, everybody would say, I hope you're as good a student as your sister was. I hope you're as smart as your sister was. I hope I was, too. I don't think I ever was. But I still love and respect her today.
Well, we all do in the family. My Aunt Bobby is wonderful. Calls me her monkey man. Hello, monkey man. Yeah. Matter of fact, if anybody ever listens to my act and you ever see me do the joke about my aunt at my brother's wedding asking me, when are you going to get married? That's my Aunt Bobby's voice, but it was my Aunt Karen who asked me that question. But her voice is a little less nondescript, a little more nondescript than my Aunt Bobby. It's a funnier voice. Right. That is very cool, Poppy. I'm glad you actually had that moment to kind of, again, come full circle with your teacher. Like you said Corbin, M-I-N, or Corbin?
Corbin.
K-O-R-B-M-A-N.
K-O-R-B-M-A-N.
Got it. So Meyer Corbin, if you're out there listening, if someone happens to hear this and knows somebody who knows Meyer Corbin and he's still around, please tell him again. Stu Schultz, thanks him very much. Okay, so now we're off the subject of your career, which again, I commend, and any teachers who are out there listening to this, a very amazing, selfless career that you're getting into, and please know that you are making a difference. Now I want to ask you about marriage. Because you and Mom have been married this year. Don't tell me. This year was your 39th wedding anniversary? Yes. And I just passed my first wedding anniversary. 38 more to go, and then I'll be like you. Okay, first let's start from the beginning. And I won't have you tell some of the stories you've told me off the record, because my dad, you wouldn't think to look at him, but my dad was quite the Casanova when he was younger. Don't give me that look. You've told me the stories, and you don't have to tell me
lies,
now.
Lies, 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 lies.
I could tell you stories. See, I've had experience on the road. But it, what amazes me, though,
I met your mom on the road.
I know the story, but it's a funny story. You'll tell me. Actually, you know what? We'll compare. Oh, this should be fun. I was just going to say, though, like, I've seen pictures of you when you were younger, and you, it's so funny how I realize how much I'm like you. Again, not just in the way that I'm acting, in the way that I am personally and emotionally, but physically. As a kid, very similar, both gawky looking. Matter of fact, I look at you right now. My dad loves to sit and lounge without a shirt on, which he's doing right now. Me, fully clothed, by the way, fully clothed. But I see you, and I'm like, this is what I'm going to look like when I get older, if I'm not careful.
I hope not. I hope not.
I hope not either. Every time I see you without your shirt, it inspires me to go
exercise.
Back to the gym. Yes. What I was going to say is that we were both like gawky looking guys, but because of our personalities, I'm sure we got laid a lot more than we really should have based on physical appearance. Because thank God I'm funny and cute, and I do the comedy thing, because that got me women way out of my league. And I'm not saying this is self-deprecate. I'm just being honest. If some of the women that I hooked up with just saw me in a bar next to another better-looking guy, half of those wouldn't have happened. But so personality definitely goes a long way, would you say?
I actually was a virgin when I got married.
I don't know who I've been talking to for the past 38 years, but I guess it wasn't you. But let's get to the story of you and Mom. You and Mom happily married. 39 years, which is fucking amazing in this day and age. And by the way, I might also say, in our family, you and Mom, as a couple with children, are the only couple that have stayed together throughout the course of the marriage. My other aunts and uncles have had previous marriages, and I'm sure it was what it was now, and they're very happy now, but you guys never had a split up. Do you ever think about that a little bit, or has that never really come up?
Being serious again. And I think I told you this yesterday. Number one, you never go to bed mad at your partner. Number two, you should always have the philosophy that I can't believe he or she loves me. I don't deserve them. And number three, fuck a lot.
Okay, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear number three, because I don't want to imagine that. But those first two are very good. Very good. And I agree. But I'm actually learning that in a very practical way now, for being with Allison, married for a year and together for about 3.5 now. And it's what's great about it, and just thinking about it now, it's funny that you and I both have very interesting, comical stories of the first time we've met our wives. Mine a little dirtier than yours. But, you know, I think most people, and I shouldn't say most people, probably half the people when they meet their spouse the first time, it's under regular circumstances. They're in class together, or they meet at a party, or they meet online. And, you know, I'm sure it's a special story, but it's kind of under the umbrella of regular ways to meet somebody. You and I met our wives in a little more different kind of circumstances, little off-the-beaten-path stories, if you will. I'll tell mine first. Allison, as anyone who's listening and my father knows, is also a comedian. And I met her at the Improv Comedy Club in Los Angeles, February 9th, 2009, I might add. We were doing a show together, only her second time ever on stage. And I was on stage on the show as Skippy Green, who I'm sure you all know is my alter ego, who will probably be making a guest appearance on this show a little later on in the episode, so get ready for that, Pop. Allison is watching me, watching Skippy on stage. And Skippy, if you've seen his act, you know that Skippy closes most of the time singing a song called Man About Town about how much he loves to go down on women and how good he is at it. And after seeing this, Allison, who is also a big pervert like me and you and Grandpa Harold, thinks to herself, oh, I could talk to this guy. So this is a true story verbatim. She comes up to
Your
Skippy.
Your mother was there, right?
Yes, Allison's mother was there. My mother-in-law, first time seeing me perform, was as Skippy Green. So that's a very good first impression to a mother-in-law. But Allison comes up to Skippy after the show and says, Skippy, thank you so much. I came three times during your song. To which Skippy said, without missing a beat, care to make it a fourth? And from there, it just was true romance. You and Mom, your story of how you met And I know this, but give me the story again for the 99 listeners that are subscribing.
You got to pay for this?
No, they literally just sign up to listen to this. No, please. Please, I wouldn't pay for this. Yes, I would.
Yeah. Well, honestly, when I said we met on the road, that was a bit of an exaggeration. Your mom and I were both going for our master's in special ed, and a mutual friend hooked us up to drive together at a certain point on the turnpike in Florida. And I drove up in my non-air-conditioned 67 Mustang, 4-speed with the 289, and am waiting and waiting. And I don't see anybody there except for this nurse. And I'm waiting and waiting, and finally I said, you know, and I got back in my car.
You can say fuck.
Can I say fuck?
Yeah.
Fuck it. I said fuck once before, right?
Yeah.
So that's like 3 fucks in one conversation?
More than you've had in a while, right?
I was just going to say that. And I drove to college, FAU, Florida Atlantic University.
My alma mater as well.
Very small college back in those days, in the early 70s. Saying, hey, I don't know who the heck this woman was, but I don't see her. And then I think I mentioned I saw this nurse, and then I get to my first class, and there's this nurse sitting there. And the mutual person who hooked us up to, you know, carpool, and I said, who's that? And she says, it's funny, she just asked me the same thing. She saw this skinny guy get out of a blue Mustang, look around, get back in his car, and drove to school. Little did I know, your mom worked in a drugstore, and that was the uniform of the day. What looked like a nurse's uniform to me was a white, you know, something. And then when we finally hooked up to meet at the same spot 2 or 3 times a week, for the duration of our masters together, is when we became best friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about best friends. You know, I would date people. She would date people. We were still confidants and best friends and talk on the phone. We would literally go out together and hook up and then separate and go with other people.
Wait, when you say hook up, you don't mean like hook up. You just meant like get together,
in the, you know, in the same car. I lived on Miami Beach. You lived in Hollywood, you know, and that's how we met. And, you know, the rest is history. I fell in love with her. I was jealous when I saw her with another guy. And finally, you want to know how I proposed to your mother?
Yeah.
You do. We started dating. And as I mentioned, we were best friends, and we started dating. And we were in this little nothing, grungy little bar in Miami Beach, about 2 blocks from my apartment. It was my fraternity house. I was a member of Mama Papa. Delphi.
It took me a second, like, Mama, I don't remember. Oh, you live with your parents. I see what you're saying.
And we're sitting there, and I paid for our drinks, and she took my wallet out of my hands, started going through my wallet. This was after, you know, a few months of dating, a couple of months. And I looked her right in the eye. I said, as long as you're going through my wallet, we have to get married. That was it. And that was my proposal. And then she had her own car because she lived in Hollywood. And so we met nearby. And then I came home and I woke up my parents, you know, because she said, yeah. And I says, I got to tell you something. I says, oh, you're in trouble again, right? And I says, no, I'm getting married. I was 25. It was about time.
Yeah.
I was.
No, you were.
I was not nowhere near 25. 25, I was still getting over somebody else. So that's really cool. So there was no preparation. Did you know you were going to ask her, or just spur of the moment?
I just knew I was in love with her. And as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, she was dating somebody. I was dating somebody. We both.
Wait, at the time that you asked her to marry you?
Yeah.
I thought you said you were together for a couple of months already.
We were dating, but we weren't exclusive.
Really? I didn't know that. Okay. So Well, could you, like, I mean, I know it's like, obviously you guys worked out, but why didn't you break up with whoever you were breaking up with and date mom exclusively?
Still in the process of hating the one that I was dating and falling in love with your mom. I had to really make sure, well, 40 years, what can I say?
But that's, I never knew that you were still dating, mom was dating somebody too at the time that she said yes?
Well, up to that time, no. You know, it might have been a couple weeks before when I broke up.
Oh, so you had broken up with somebody before you asked mom to meet. Oh, okay, I thought you said you were dating
It was a couple of weeks, and I was realizing how much I loved your mom at that time and how much this other woman was not like your mom.
What would you say are the top three things about mom that you love the most? In no order.
Your mom, you, and your brother.
The thing you love about mom is mom?
The thing I love about your mother is your mother. She's the most wonderful person on this earth. And as long as I realize it and she doesn't, I think I'm in good shape.
I think every married man probably feels that way. I know I feel that way about Allison. Like I think I've told you this, that one of the main reasons I fell in love with Allison is because she has all the most wonderful traits that mom has. She's selfless. She's kind. She sees the good in everything. And she loves to take care of others. She puts other people before herself. And that's what mom is too. And we're very lucky guys. You know that. We're very lucky guys. It's not over yet. My dad's giving me the let's cut this yet. No. We're not done yet. It's my fucking show. It's my show. We got a couple
it's
things to do.
My family room. It is my family room. Okay, go.
Right now, it's my studio. Okay. Well,
cartoons.
What's that?
Nothing.
You're missing cartoons. Okay. Well, I wanted to keep talking to you, but I guess a man in your old age wants to get back to his Pawn Stars.
Oh, we weren't watching Porn Stars?
No. But speaking of, Pop, it's now time for a little part of the show. Little part of the show called The Skippy Green Show.
It's The Skippy Green Show.
Stu, how are you? I'm sorry, my name is Stu, your name is?
Go fuck yourself. All right, Stu. This is a little part of the show where I ask you a question. And you have to answer this question in 10 words exactly. Not 11. Not 9, 10. All right?
Okay, yeah.
All right, your arthritis is bothering you. There's one finger you can't straighten out. I know something else on your body you probably can't straighten out either, but that has nothing to do with arthritis.
Count to 10.
We'll keep track. All right, you ready, Stutch?
Yes.
I'm going to call you Stutch.
All right, Stutch.
All right, Stutch, here we go. 10 words exactly. Answer this question. Where is the most unbelievably public place you've ever fucked abroad? Your wife does not count.
My wife does not count?
No.
That's not part of the 10 words.
Not part of the 10 words. Ow! Now, so I had a disco moment. Answer the question.
On a public... No. Start again. On a private beach in the water on Key Biscayne.
So you know Sharon too, huh? Never mind.
I couldn't think of 10 words to answer that.
No, that's all there was.
Hold on. No.
That was awesome, Pop. And I think I actually been to that same beach. Seriously, I want to thank you for saying, I know that you probably think this is a little silly, but I really did enjoy our little time talking on public. This is great too. Forever, this is going to be out there. So I want you to know, Dad, I really do love you very much. And I cherish not only our father-son relationship, but our friendship. And I want you to know sincerely that you are every bit the father that your father was. And I love you very much.
Do I get residuals for this?
No. No, you do not. You do not.
I'm very proud of you, son. As proud as any papa could be. And I'm so glad I don't have to pay to see your shows.
I don't invite you anymore.
Because I would.
Well, and I want to thank you guys for listening to this kind of just more personal episode. I hope you learn to learn a little bit about my dad, Stuart. By the way, my dad, you're on Facebook, right? Search for Stuart. So if you go to my
I never ever look at my Facebook page, nor do I befriend anybody who wants to be my friend. I'm a loner. And I think Facebook and Twitter are stupid. Call me.
All right, here's my father's number.
No.
You just said to call.
I'm number 13.
Well, he is on Facebook then for some reason. So if you find him, friend him, and he'll never friend you back. But you can find me on Facebook, as always, facebook.com/FlipSchultz2, FlipSchultz2, because the other one's already taken. Thank you to all the friends I have on that. Also find me on Twitter, @FlipSchultz, YouTube/FlipSchultz. And if you're in the, if you're in the California area, on August 8th, I'll be in Rancho Cucamonga at Rock the Keys, along with Skippy Green and Allison Weber. And I will be in Vegas the last week of August. I believe that's August 28th through September 2nd. I'll be at the Las Vegas Improv. And August 16th, I'll be headlining the Irvine Improv. And all the other dates are found on my website, flipisfunny.com. As always, you can order my CDs off Amazon and iTunes and get my DVDs, too. You get those at my website. And anything else I got to tell you about? No, just as always, guys, thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate all your love and support, and I know my family does too, because it proves to them that I'm not just some little shit kid still trying to be silly. I'm actually doing something with this, and trust me, every time you guys laugh, my parents smile a little bigger. Less money he has to give me, so says my father. So thank you guys again. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next week. Bye!